Madame Guiry va nous parler du rôle joué par la photo à la cour des rois Bamoum au Cameroun. Et sa présentation porte sur un genre de photo en particulier, le portrait. Alors, notre intervenante s'intéresse au statut du portrait photographique à la cour du roi Ibrahim Njoya en particulier, qui a été au pouvoir de 1882 à 1924. Elle s'intéresse à l'impact de ce genre d'image sur l'émergence d'autres formes de portraits, et à l'usage fait de tout cela par Njoya et par ses successeurs, à la façon dont la royauté Bamoum s'est servie du portrait au XIXe et au XXe siècle afin de forger et de disséminer une version de l'histoire qui lui était favorable et, ce faisant, a influé durablement sur la mémoire collective du peuple Bamoum. Alors, lorsque les Allemands arrivent à Fumban, la capitale du royaume Bamoum, ils y rencontrent, nous dit Mme Guiry, une élite dirigeante qui pratique déjà depuis le XIXe siècle, au moins, l'art de mettre en mémoire par les objets les grandes son histoire politique. Le concept du portrait est présent déjà dans les arts Bamoum, dans les superbes statues perlées que les rois commanditent pour mémorialiser les grands de la cour. Et lorsque le premier photographe européen arrive dans la capitale en 1902, on y connaît déjà la photographie. On n'a pas attendu. Et on la connaît grâce à des contacts soutenus avec la côte camerounaise d'une part et la colonie britannique du Nigeria également, où les portraits photographiques circulent depuis la fin du 19e. Alors, sur cette base, la culture photographique se développe rapidement entre 1902 et 1914, qui sont les années de la colonisation allemande, bien sûr. Le portrait, dans ce contexte, fait florès, et la cour en fait un usage judicieux. Au moyen de portraits qui mettent en scène les grands de la cour et qui affirment la centralité de l'élite au pouvoir, les rois Bamoum assoient leur pouvoir face à des dissensions internes et aux yeux des colonisateurs, dont ils s'approprient et détournent toute une gamme de stratégies de la représentation et du contrôle. De nouvelles formes de portraits sont développées à la cour, dont un type qui est aujourd'hui fort prisé, de dessins de rois et de scènes de palais rendus à l'encre et au crayon. Dessins, portraits photographiques et autres types de représentations, par exemple les cartes postales, se mettent à circuler et s'influencent les unes les autres. Et des archives se constituent qui sont privées et qui appartiennent à la cour également. À cela se mêle l'influence de recueils de dessins et de photos qui sont publiés par des membres de la cour, par des photographes allemands, par des missionnaires, ainsi que de nombreux genres de sculptures dont la cour soutient activement le développement et qui, eux aussi, influencent et sont influencés en retour par les portraits photographiques. Ces influences vont continuer de se faire sentir au-delà du règne de Njoya, qui va être déposé en 1924 par la colonie française, et la culture du portrait va continuer à se développer. La création d'un musée national, qui est situé dans un vaste palais construit par Njoya en 1918, et où de nombreuses photos de la période allemande sont exposées, participe à ce développement du portrait. En Europe aussi, il y a circulation, reproduction et collection d'images de la cour Bamoum. Et alors, il se passe quelque chose de très très intéressant dans les années 80, c'est qu'en 85, Mme Guiry et un parent du sultan publient un livre de photos de la cour. Et ce livre est largement diffusé à Fumban, et il ajoute de façon significative à l'intérêt que les uns et les autres expriment pour l'image. Les portraits de Njoya et de sa cour qu'on y voit influencent passablement un des artistes les plus connus de Fumban, Dairu Gozen, qui se fait le leader d'une renaissance du portrait dans la capitale Bamoum. Le sultan Seydou lui commande une série de peintures de la cour. C'est le sultan Seydou est mort.
C'était Bamou.
Ah, c'était Bamou.
Oui,
pardon,
oui,
je suis désolée. Le sultan donc lui commande une série de peintures de la cour que le souverain met à profit pour asseoir son pouvoir et celui de la dynastie plus largement au sein de la communauté Bamoum, au sein de la nation camerounaise, donc en rapport avec le gouvernement Biya et son opposition, et internationalement, notamment à travers un discours du patrimoine. Donc le portrait, et c'est ce qui est vraiment exploré dans cette intervention, reste une forme dynamique, ouverte à la réinterprétation et essentielle à la construction de la souveraineté. J'espère que j'ai...
Oui, c'est bien fait. Je crois que je peux quitter maintenant. Merci, Dominique. Au commencement, je veux dire merci beaucoup aux organisateurs du colloque de m'inviter, de m'inviter ici. Ça me donne la chance de voir c'est ce qu'on fait ici en France dans le domaine visuel. Merci beaucoup. Hein. Alors maintenant, je parle en anglais parce que c'est beaucoup plus simple pour moi. This presentation explores the role of photography, in particular photographic portraiture of rulers and people associated with the institution of kingship, by exploring the history of the depiction of rulers in the Bamoun Kingdom of Cameroon. I base my observations on in-depth archival research on photography in Bamoun by foreign photographers, which resulted in several publications in the 1980s and 1990s. In this contribution, I will briefly talk about two aspects of my current research. The first aspect, the study of the role of photographic portraits during the reign of King Ibrahim Njoya, who ruled from 1882 to 1924, when he was deposed by the French, and their fostering of two-dimensional portraiture in other media. And the second point, the study of the role, an analysis of the redeployment and transformation into other media of royal photographic portraits in an effort by the palace to inscribe a palace-based history and memory in present-day Bamoun, which I call invented, because it constructs a chronology, favors certain events, and posits the palace vis-à-vis its opponents. Nineteenth century Bamoun saw the rules of several important kings, among them King Bombou, who ruled from about 1820 to 1840, who expanded the realm of the kingdom by subjugating many small independent chiefdoms in its orbit, and beaded sculptures such as the ones that you see here, created by artists working exclusively for the court, may well memorialize long-forgotten retainers, noblemen and women, even monarchs, being part of a pervasive memory culture that manifests itself in every aspect of Bamoun life to this day. When photography and with it representational portraiture in two-dimensional format arrived in Fumban, it soon found its way into the palace's instrumentarium of visualization, legitimizing and asserting royal power vis-à-vis the populace of the kingdom and the new place of the new players on the local and regional stage, and these were the colonials. So the palace actually used photography internally and externally. Photography, or to phrase it more accurately, photographic image objects arrived in Fumban well before the first white photographer, a German captain by the name of Hans Ramsay, ever set foot in this inland state on the 6th of July 1902, and this is the first picture ever taken of King Joya. In an earlier paper, I pointed out that even before the official advent of photographic apparatus in town, some elite Bamoun were familiar with photography, and I would argue portrait photography in particular, since it was widely practiced in the coastal regions of Cameroon and in neighboring Nigeria, then a British colony. At the end of the 19th century, portrait photography of African sitters by African, European, and some photographers who came from other parts of the world had well-developed conventions and aesthetic parameters which reflect what I would call an expanding photographic culture shared by peoples along the West African and Central African coasts. Bamoun was on the periphery of this larger photographic ecumene. Royal trading missions brought men in the service of the palace to Cameroon and to the Nigerian coasts, and image objects circulated widely and reached the interior, thus Bamoun in the late 19th century. When European photographers arrived in Fumban in 1902, they and their products were well received. Portraits of King Joya and his mother Njabunduke and royal courtiers and other people who worked for the palace taken during the German colonial presence in Fumban between 1902 and 1914 are abundant and attest to the eagerness of the subjects and the photographers alike to create these images. And here you see on the left-hand side, Bamun nobility portrayed, and on the right-hand side you see a postcard that actually comes from the French Congo. The poses of the sitters, as you can see in these two images, echo the visual repertoires of European portrait photography as well as of African portraiture conventions found along the coast. And here you have the African conventions, which are very, very clearly expressed in these images. Poses in photographs of German royalty, magazine images, prints, and postcards circulating in Fumban inspired some Bamun sitters associated with the palace. One of the best examples is a photograph of King Joya by an unknown photographer, which you see on the left-hand side, modeled entirely on an official portrait of Emperor Wilhelm II, which arrived in Fumban as a present for the king in 1906. And on the lower image, you see the donation, the gift of the portrait of the emperor. And on the upper image on the right, you see actually a postcard that circulated in Germany of that same portrait. This photograph of King Joya is a clear statement how he perceived and positioned himself within the kingdom in the larger Grassfields region and vis-à-vis the Germans. He saw himself as an autonomous ruler and equal of the distant emperor. It has been frequently stated that portraiture provides an ideal means of remembrance and the inscription of history, and these are the aspects that I wish to turn to now. Portrait photographs presented an opportunity to deploy the visual in legitimizing the palaces and the dynasty's claims to power, much like sculptures and the accumulation of other types of royal objects, including trophies removed during successful military campaigns against neighboring peoples. What seems important then is the uses of the image objects by the palace and the Bamun elite allied with the palace. In this type of investigation, it becomes irrelevant whether the pictures were created by European or indigenous photographers. And I should say that the first indigenous photographer actually began work in Fumban in the 1940s. On the one hand, the integration of photography into the palace repertoire was an act directed towards the outside. That means King Joya deployed portrait photographs as an opportunity to perform self and present the palace visually in order to assert his position in the colonial state. On the other hand, photographs had extensive local use and circulated among families associated with the palace and loyal to the palace. It should be noted that European photographers who had developed their pictures in location left many prints with the palace and with the Bamun elite families, which to this day can be found in photographic albums. And here you see an image which was taken in 1908 by Bernhard Ankermann, who is a German anthropologist. And this is an image that I found in a photography album of a family when I was there in 2004. So they still keep that image. They actually don't know who the person is. More importantly, the entire corpus of photographs taken of palace members presented a picture of unity and centrality of the palace, much contested by important lineages in the kingdom who challenged the legitimacy of the dynasty. King Joya's rule in particular had been precarious before the arrival of the Germans, and the colonial presence provided the king and the palace with an opportunity to consolidate their position internally. The king's and the palace's encouragement of photographers and the subsequent accumulation of photographs in what would later become a palace archive was in keeping with strategies on controlling and containing power internally and externally. Here it is the power to appropriate and control the production and the internal dissemination of one's visual presentations. One particular type of image became associated with claims to the legitimacy of rulership. It merges the meaning of the famous two-figure thrones, which you see here, and they're called Manduyinu, that's the Bamun term for the two-figure thrones. It merges them as an iconic symbol of the kingdom with the persona of the king, a practice that goes back to the very first depictions of King Joya, and on the left-hand side you see an image taken in 1902. On the right-hand side you see a postcard that's actually Mission de Paris, which circulated in France and circulated in Cameroon as well. A larger number of similar images of Njoya himself and his successors, Sedun Jimilo Njoya and Sultan Bombu, circulated widely. Here you have two photographs, one of King Sedo on the throne, Mandu Yinu, and another one which I took in 2004, during a celebration of Nguyen in Bamum. The most interesting of these pictures, there are many of those, the most interesting of these pictures actually shows even a claimant to the throne, an image that apparently has never circulated widely and never, to my knowledge, returned to Bamum. This is taken in 1933 during the upheaval, and I was told by many Bamum this is totally sacrilegious if you actually show that picture in Bamum, because it shows somebody else than the king, the official king, sitting on the throne. Photographic representations supported the rise of another genre of portraiture, which was initially entirely palace-based. The famous depictions of kings and historical scenes, works by eminent artists, among them Ibrahim Joya, who lived from 1890 to 1966. And it should be pointed out here that Alexandra Lumpe Galincini has worked on these essays, and she has published an article in 2002 about these paintings by Ibrahim Joya. Just like portrait photography, these subsequent ink and pencil drawings, and here you see photographs juxtaposed with the central image of the previous king list that I showed. These particular king lists actually allowed inscribing a political order with a king at the central place, and a particular modernity, and also the palace-based and palace-generated history, which was consolidated in a book called Histoire et Coutume Bamum, a history compiled by the palace elite and by King Joya and written in a Bamum indigenous script that King Joya actually invented with his courtiers. And here you see, of course, the references to the particular photographs in the form of dress and adornment, and Ibrahim Joya certainly had these images available to himself when he did the drawings. Based on Kopitov's seminal essay about the cultural biography of things, recent photographic studies of the social uses of photography have focused on, to quote Elizabeth Edwards, the entangled layers of social biographies of individual photographs and groups of photographs that have active social lives beyond the bounds of the image itself, end of quote. The very nature of the images, the fact that they can be repeatedly printed and moved in and out of circulation, inspire depictions in other media, that they can be preserved, at times published, and even destroyed, renders them dynamic and open to multiple reinterpretations over time. I will now briefly explore the broader arena of social uses and transformations of royal portraits over time, which have occurred irrespective of who took the photographs, whether European or African photographers. In the palace and in the parlors of eminent Bamum families loyal to the palace, royal portraits produced during the German and French colonial periods, king lists, and drawings of historical scenes take cherished places next to more recent portraits of family members by African photographers. Several portraits of King Joya will serve as a small case study examining the circulation, reuse, and recreation in other media and reinscription of meaning both in Bamum and in the Euro-American setting. One of the images is a photographic portrait of the king by Anna Wurman, dating to the years between 1912 and 1914, and Anna Wurman was a missionary who worked in Humban. Published in her writing, for example, as the frontispiece or the cover in her 1931 book Liebes und Leides aus Kamerun, Erlebnis im Missionsdienst, in approximate translation, Love and Suffering from Cameroon, Experiences in the Missionary Service, it circulated in German-speaking Europe. It is part of a set of two images, and on the left-hand side you see the book cover, on the right-hand side you see the portrait of King Joya, which is in the book. It is part of a set of two images taken at the same time, one showing the king with his head slightly turned to the side and the other presenting him in a profile view. Both portraits were also part of an album that woman left at the missionary station in Ngisi Fumban, so the image actually remained in Fumban, when she returned to Fumban for a second stay with the Mission de Paris in 1920. For many years, vintage prints of this and other photographs were displayed in the old Palace Museum. Here you see an image of the old museum, complementing what I would describe as a dignitas portrait. This is a portrait that is composed of emblematic objects. These are akin to Borgatti's emblematic portraits, and in her words they are, quote, symbolic devices to evoke an image of the subject in the mind's eye of the viewer. They are often non-anthropomorphic and may include an assemblage of goods or visual clues that recall the individuals, end of quote. Until 1990, when the Palace Museum moved to its new quarters in King Joya's famous 1980 Palace building, and two archaeologists reinstalled the objects according to Western Museum practice, it was housed in the three-room mud brick building that you saw just before, with a corrugated iron roof at the entrance of the palace. It was divided into rooms. The room to the left of the entrance was devoted to legendary kings Mbumbu and Sun Zhang Wu, the one to the right to Sultan Sedu, the current king, and then the central one to his son Joya. They contained objects associated with rulers and accumulated by them during their reign. Each room in its entirety, and you see here a couple of shots of these rooms, actually constituted a portrait of the respective king. In the rooms of King Joya and Sultan Sedu, photographs allowed a more direct reading and understanding of each room's intention and meaning. The focal point in King Joya's room was the two-figure throne, Mandu Yinu, which he commissioned as a replacement for the one that had gone to Berlin, to the Berlin Museum, and it was enhanced by the large photograph that you see here, modeled on the portrait of the German emperor that I showed you in the beginning. It shows the king in a gala uniform, a German-style uniform, and in-painted double serpents. So this photograph has actually been redone by a photographer in Bamum. And you see a double gong emblematic of Bamum kingship, which adorns the upper part. To the left of the portrait was a display of beaded epaulets, and they're in that little frame there to the left of the picture, which were part of the uniform regalia that King Joya wore mostly during a particular period during his rule. And he also wore German-style uniforms. And then, of course, you see the embroidered cape, which is King Joya's cape, which is draped around the portrait. In its entirety, this arrangement of the throne, royal dress, and portrait, photographic portrait, recalled the essence of Joya's persona and of his reign during the years about from 1906 to 1910, when the palace visualized his alliances with the Germans by adopting these uniforms. This display of objects and image was an almost uncanny recreation of the king sitting in state on the throne. The Palace Museum images remembering and celebrating King Joya, all from German times, are among the most reproduced in Fumban to this day, as families commission copies and copy prints from local photographers on occasion of festivals at the palace. Photographs circulated not only as recent photographic reproductions, some of them also inspired royal commissions in other media. An artist modeled an official monument in brass after a portrait photograph from the later years of King Joya's reign. In production in 1984, which you see on the left-hand side when I took this slide, it now graces the dancing field and market area in front of the palace and has become one of the focal points of the palace's efforts to legitimate its rule in turbulent times and to construct a unique Bamum identity in the Cameroonian state. Portraits of royals in the palace elite did not only circulate in Bamum, they also have complex histories in Europe and later in America. It would be interesting, but beyond the scope of this essay, to follow the life history of a particular image in Germany, where they were published, archived, and at times reissued. Suffice to say that by the 1970s, portraits from Bamum and images from Bamum were mostly forgotten in Germany. The trajectories of the images in both realms seemed independent of each other, until they became intertwined in the early 1980s. The impetus was Ndam Joya's and my book entitled Mandu Yinu, Photographie du Pays Bamum, Royaume Ouest Africain, which came out in 1985, with 100 photographs, including 25 official portraits of King Joya, dating back to the German colonial period. Produced with funds from the German Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the entire French edition went to Cameroon, and a large number of these books arrived in Fumban in 1985. The images of King Joya, which had rarely been published before for some 40 years in German-speaking countries, re-entered circulation due to a growing interest in Bamum art history and history and colonial photography in Europe and the United States. In Bamum, Mandu Yinu fell on fertile ground, and royal images, now accessible to a much larger viewership, were actually no longer restricted to the perusal of the palace elite and the kings, and so they circulated in town. It was as if photographs accumulated and to a certain extent controlled in and by the palace had now become democratized and were available for broader consumption and reinterpretations. Several booklets published by the palace reprinted some of these images, and that's one of the books you see here. Among them, this one, which was done by Aboubakar Jassin Joya, whom you may know. He has a PhD in history from University of Paris, and he did this book. And you see the image of King Joya that I showed before in that little inset there on top. Local artists who had continued to produce king lists and historical genre paintings catering to an external as well as internal clientele now included paintings inspired by these historical photographs in their repertoire. Portraits, either as part of the king lists or as single images on pieces of thin plywood, heavy paper, and in the form of wall paintings, are now the repertoire of many artists in Fumban. Among them is Emmanuel Diop, the grandson of Nji Mama, who was a royal retainer in the service of King Joya and instrumental in creating the Bamum script. Nuop specializes in meticulous pencil drawings evoking scenes of King Joya's rule. In one of his works, he renders a photograph in Mandu Yinu, yet couches it in its own particular idiom, and one can talk quite a bit about this image and the details that he introduces there, but because we have little time, I will leave that for my written paper. Dai Rogozin is the best known among the painters inspired by Mandu Yinu, and the later publication, Images from Bamum, which is a book that I did for the Museum of African Art in Washington, D.C., that can also be found in Fumban. To people in town, he's the best known painter for his skills in rendering photographic portraits in the painterly medium. And these are oftentimes portraits of deceased family members in large formats on sheets of plywood. He uses acrylic colors, and his palette is bright and cheerful. His commissions also include portraits of the kings based on earlier king lists by other local artists in private hand and depicted in his very own dog-eared copy of Les Dessins Bamum, which is a book which was published by the Musée de Marseille. He bases larger renderings of King Joya, Sultan Seydou, and the current Sultan Bamboo Joya on portrait photographs and strives for likeness to the photographic original. Occasionally, he creates murals, among them the historic tableau in the Maison de la Culture, under the directorship of Omar Mchari and funded by the palace. Now, here you see the images that he did for the meeting hall in the Maison de la Culture. A closer look at Daivu's portraits of King Joya reveals which images inspired him. For portraits of King Joya, Daivu found one model in Anna Wurman's empathetic 1912 portrait and created different versions over time. This is the very image that used to hang in the Palace Museum and that could be found in the mission station in Jissi, and that may have circulated as a reproduction in town for many years. It also appeared in the book Images from Bamum. You see the book on the right-hand side. A painting in black and white on canvas most closely resembles the tonality of the original photograph, as you can see here. Another portrait of Njoya on the palace wall derives from a different early photograph. You see that here on the left-hand side. Very likely an image taken by Marie-Pauline Torbecke in January 1912 and published in Mandu Yinu and Images from Bamum. Here, a bright yellow backdrop accentuates the bright blue and white strips of Ndop, the locally woven indigo resist dyed cloth reserved for royalty, and that catches the viewer's eye. It is noteworthy that King Bombo Njoya commissioned this series of acrylic royal paintings and portraits on occasion of the Nguyen Festival in December in 2005. And on the lower image you see the completed work. This is a king list of the Bamun kings. On the upper image, in the upper image you see Dai Wu as he's actually painting. And he's painting with an audience, which is interesting from the point of view of performance. He hadn't quite finished the portraits then. The Nguyen Festival, which had been discontinued in the 1930s because of pressure by the French, had been resurrected by Sultan Sedu in the 1980s, shortly after the photographs began to circulate again. It was part of a larger effort by the palace at re-traditionalizing processes which continue to this day. Nguyen brings together Bamun from around the world, affirming the palace's role in local, national, and global arenas. What to make of this current renaissance and recirculating of royal portraiture in the form of reprints, local publications, and in different media by the palace? I suggest that it echoes the visual strategies King Joya and the palace employed in regards to photographic portraiture during the colonial period, directed towards both the inside and the outside. Inside, the king and the palace deploys the images to maintain the constructed, that is, the invented history, and affirm the palace's claim to superiority within the power structure in the town of Fumban and in the Bamun Kingdom. The palace's use of the portraits in various forms for outside purposes was one of the main concerns in this contribution. Through their recirculation, they support in visual terms the palace's claims to legitimacy and affirm Bamun's central role in the Cameroonian state and beyond. The palace narrative positions the Bamun as people with a long and distinguished history, as creative and innovative, and as Cameroon's most influential kingdom with a unique patrimony. Thus, the portraits remain active, open to reinterpretations and redeployment in these ongoing constructions of historical narratives.
Thank you.